talking a little bit about the history, it was founded in 1906, and you came on in 2003, is that right?
That's correct, 2003. And it was founded for a very different kind of set of purposes. It was founded as an orchestra for the folks who worked for the DuPont Company as a kind of recreational orchestra. And they called it the Tanka Panicum Orchestra, which I think is a hilarious name for a nonprofit to have the words tank and panic in there. It's probably a bad idea. And it slowly kind of morphed into a professional orchestra.
And what was the situation when you arrived in terms of how many musicians, you know, professional or non-professional, and how many concerts?
It was fully professional. The orchestra was fully professional when I arrived. We hovered somewhere between, I would say, 7 and 10 pairs or triples of concerts a year when I arrived for the first couple of years.
How has it evolved since then?
The orchestra has grown enormously over the last 10 seasons from a musical standpoint. I think we have become really a very, very fine regional orchestra that performs at a very high level. And I think it's surprising how wonderfully the orchestra plays together, considering the infrequency with which we play together, which is the case for really any regional orchestra. You know, we're not sitting on the stage together every week.
And what happened in 2012?
I think it's a challenge for any arts organization to balance fiscal prudence with artistic responsibility. If you get to a point where one of those things begins to call all the shots, you end up in a bad place. And I think that we ended up backing ourselves into a corner in that regard. And I think that going forward, I'm very excited that we have a staff and a board that are committed to finding a really appropriate balance between fiscal prudence and artistic responsibility.
Now that you've kind of regrouped and planned a new season and are going forward with some exciting programs, both symphonic and chamber music, what is your goal and what is your philosophy in terms of shaping musical programs and you know, who are you trying to reach and with what kind of music?
I think to the extent that my programming philosophy can be kind of distilled down to something very brief, I think that first and foremost, it needs to be great music. So that's step number one. I always look for programs that have some kind of continuity in them that may not in fact be a overtly musical continuity. Sometimes they are overtly musical. But I think that often to make a program that has some kind of narrative element that ties it together ends up being more of a marketing ploy than a musical one. And so it's always a challenge and a delightful challenge to try and find a program which has a kind of a balance to it from a musical standpoint, but then also has some kind of interesting marketing hooks that, and I don't just mean what can you put in the brochure, I mean, how can I walk out on the stage and say, hey, by the way, this is all great music, and this is the reason all these things are inhabiting the same evening. And also, look, there's this other element that really has almost nothing to do with music, but it also happens to bind these pieces together into an evening. And then I work hard to take those evenings of music over the course of the season and create a kind of a full menu that, were you to go to all the concerts, you would receive a kind of a sense of completeness and wholeness for the whole season. So it's you know, the programs themselves need to stand alone, but they also need to combine in a meaningful way with one another. One of the things that I'm very proud of this season is that we're featuring so many of our own musicians as soloists. In this concert coming up in October, we're featuring our concertmaster David Southhorn as soloist in the Mozart Fifth Violin Concerto. And then our concerts coming up in March, we're featuring not one of our members, not two, not three, but four of our members as soloists. The whole horn section of the Delaware Symphony will be featured in the Schumann Konzertstück, which is a wonderful, it's a wonderful opportunity to hear a piece that needs to be heard more and just isn't because of logistics.
What do you mean?
It's hard to get four horn players' schedule clear and say, here, show up now and let's do this piece live. You know, there's some great recordings of it, but the opportunity to hear it live is just, it's so wonderful, and we have such a great horn section.
How does the chamber concert series fit into your overall plan?
The chamber series that we have is a nice opportunity to explore a repertoire that doesn't really find a comfortable home on a big stage. So what that means to me is we do traditional chamber music, Mozart Clarinet Quintet, the Mozart Quintet for Piano and Winds, but we also do larger works which would be out of place at a big symphony concert, but also would be out of place in a traditional chamber music concert. And there's great repertoire like that. So L'Histoire de Soldat we're doing the Vaughan Williams Oboe Concerto, we're doing the Dvorak String Serenade. These are larger works that require a conductor, but they're not full symphonic works.
These concerts are all at all different places.
Right.
Is that a difficult thing, or is that a plus?
I think having concerts in various venues presents a lot of benefits and some challenges. I think that from a practical standpoint, I think that bringing an orchestra into a venue they haven't been in before means that there are going to be some adaptations that need to be made on the fly, just from a musical standpoint. People can hear themselves or not, or how they hear themselves and when they hear themselves. Just that you need to learn to play in the space. I mean, we talk about people's instruments, but what we don't talk about enough is the fact that the room we play in is our shared instrument. So we need to learn to play the room. But I think that challenge is far outweighed by the benefits of being out and about in the community, of being in areas of Wilmington that we haven't been to before, and allowing ourselves to better live up to our name of the Delaware Symphony.
What do you think the future of classical music is? And do you see the way in which orchestral concerts are presented changing to keep pace with technology? Have you been thinking about ways
I've been thinking about ways in which we need to change what we do. But I think that to some extent, to think about changing the format of a symphony concert in order to address whatever we perceive of it as the prevailing issue in the arts world, the classical music world, is a little bit like changing the curtains in the house when what you really need to do is shore up the whole place and re-pour a new foundation. I think that the way that a concert will be formatted and structured needs to be different, and it will be different, but we need to be thinking about much larger issues. The arts world has succumbed to what is really fundamentally a free market economy. We have lost our position as cultural leaders, and we have been subsumed by the world of entertainment. So now you even see sections of newspapers called arts and entertainment. People talk about spending their entertainment dollars at the symphony or at the movies or at a baseball game. If the arts are going to try and compete and win with things like the movies and professional sports, we are doomed. We cannot compete. We are not entertainment, however. We are something else. We are art. Entertainment is a pursuit which reinforces cultural boundaries. The arts are a pursuit which expand cultural boundaries. Once we embrace that reality about what we do, and we free ourselves and become untethered from this idea of entertainment, what can we do to get them in the hall? What can we sell to get them in the hall? Once we stop thinking that way, and we start really doing what we are charged with doing, which is making great art, expanding these boundaries, I think that the solution will become clear. I don't know what it is. I don't have the answer. But what I do know is that at a performance of great music, something often happens. There is a sense of kind of spiritual community and unity in the hall between the musicians and the audience, and amongst the audience themselves. That's what we all do this for.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.